It's time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger, the editor, publisher of The Timberjates, a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. I can't believe it's a week already, but thanks for being here, Marshall.
Yeah, happy to be here, Heidi.
Well, I know one of the big stories you've been covering has to do with the House and Senate legislation having to do with wild rice sulfate standards. What is happening on that front?
Well, the legislature is taking significant steps, actually, to eliminate that sulfate standard, which has been in Minnesota law since the 1970s, and it sets the sulfate discharge limit at 10 milligrams per liter for any discharges going into water used in the production of wild rice. But that would be also for wild rice stands. And, of course, this has been a very controversial topic. We've been talking about it for a while. It wasn't a controversy for many years because the MPCA really didn't enforce it. But in recent years, they've been under pressure from Indian tribes and from environmental groups to begin enforcing this standard because they were concerned about, you know, the impacts on wild rice. And as a result of that, as they started to take steps to enforce it, they started to get more and more pushback. And this latest effort by the legislature is kind of part of that ongoing pushback. The biggest concerns have been from the taconite industry and also from some wastewater treatment plant facilities, mostly on the Iron Range. That seems to be where most of the concern and pushback is coming from on this sulfate issue, seems to be up in this neck of the woods. So what the legislature has done is both the House and the Senate now have passed a bill that would nullify that wild rice sulfate standard and does not propose a new standard. It would essentially, without a standard, we would just go back to whatever the existing federal drinking water standard is, presumably. But that's not at all clear. What is clear is that if the governor signs this bill, this issue will almost certainly be headed to federal court. I've already heard from some environmental attorneys who have indicated that they would certainly pursue litigation on this question. They say that what the legislature is doing is a direct violation of the Clean Water Act, because once a standard is in place and has been proven scientifically valid and the EPA has signed off on it, you cannot eliminate that standard or weaken it without some kind of scientific justification. And the legislature, we've probably talked about this in the past, back in 2011, actually had approved some funding for some new scientific studies on sulfate and wild rice. And they had kind of hoped, I think, that that would sort of invalidate the need for that 10 milligram per liter standard that's been in effect for so long. But in fact, the science effectively confirmed it. And so that has proven a problem for the legislature and made it a little bit harder to move. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens here at this point. I did reach out to the governor's office, and they said they're still reviewing the legislation. It may be that the governor will opt not to sign it. If he does, like I said, I suspect this will be headed to court.
All right. You'll keep us posted on that issue, of course.
Will do.
Let's talk now about a story about the Orr Center. Give us a little background again what the Orr Center is and what's new there.
Sure. Well, this is the former Orr High School, actually the former K-12 school in Orr, and it was closed by the St. Louis County School District back in 2010. And since then, the community decided they wanted to, you know, rescue the school. They realized it's a valuable facility, and they're trying to do a number of innovative things there. They have a group of volunteers who have been working really tirelessly to try to forward a number of projects there using this center. They're looking to do a lot with sustainability. They want to be having like a camp facility there that would teach homesteading skills and natural living types of skills to young people or people of any age who might want to come in and spend time. They also do an annual homesteading and sustainable living expo. They'll be holding that one in early September this year. They're also doing homegrown food production. They're looking at aquaponics. They're in the process of developing an aquaponic system where they'd raise fish and then also vegetables as well. I mean, that's sort of in process right now. They're running the community food shelf. They're looking at doing a lot of other things. One of the things that has just been opened recently is a new store. It's a thrift store that has a lot of donated items, a wide range of things. And it's an opportunity for people in Orr, because right now, since the closing of the Orr General Store there back several years ago, there really hasn't been much in terms of a place to shop for a lot of household items, for clothes, you name it. There's a lot of merchandise there that's come in, a lot of kids' clothes, I know, household items, like I said, pots and pans, dishes, you know, shoes, lots and lots of books. They've got, you know, DVDs, CDs. They even have videotapes. So if you're still living in the 1970s, you got a place to go and find some of those old videotapes that you probably don't, if your recorder's still working, I guess.
It's good to hear stories about people repurposing some of those great school buildings out there and doing some things different for the future.
That's for sure. And they have a good mission, I think, and a lot of active volunteers, too, which is always great. In a small town like Orr, which I think has a population of 280.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, let's move on. Finally, we have some spring weather out there. What's going on at the Pine River Hatchery?
Well, that's the Pike River Hatchery.
Oh, Pike, that's right.
Yes, yep, and it is finally underway. It was a little bit of a late start this year. In fact, it was the second latest start they've ever had. They got the nets in the water on May 2nd, and right away they had a ton of walleye. And that's typical when they have a late start. You know, the walleye kind of are all pent up waiting to start coming up the Pike River there off of Lake Vermilion. That's one of their traditional spawning rivers. And that's why they, you know, net the walleyes there and strip the eggs and all that, and then they raise fry up there in the hatchery building. So they've been going steady since Tuesday now, and have had, like I said, great success. And they'll probably wrap up their egg taking within just a matter of a few days, just because the run is so strong this year.
Another seasonal story earlier this month, or within the last month or so, you told us a story about the city of Ely and how these mysterious blue bags ended up hanging from the trees within the city limits to tap maple trees. What has the city done so far having to do with this?
Well, of course, this has created you know, quite a little controversy in town. And it's funny because, you know, people had been tapping these trees, these city silver maple trees, for many years, and it's just that it hadn't been in such a obvious manner and so sort of methodical as this group had done this year, particularly because they had these blue bags, so they were readily recognizable as you would look down the street and see all these bags hanging. So it definitely got people's attention and started to raise some concerns about, you know, what it might be doing to the trees. Some of the trees are getting older, and they're having some health issues already. And so there was concern that by doing this, they could be hurting the trees. And so it looks like at this point, the city council is in the process of drafting an ordinance that would effectively end the practice of tapping maple sap from city-owned maple trees. You can still do it, obviously, if it's in your own yard or your neighbor's yard or friend's yard, but not on city-owned trees within the boulevard or any city-owned parks.
Good to know. And before we go, another seasonal story. I think maybe 2 weeks ago, definitely 3 weeks ago, it seemed like ice would not be off the lakes by opening fishing. How's it looking now?
Well, there will be open water for fishing opener on Saturday. There's no question about it. The only question is how much. And it looks like, I mean, we're hopeful. And it just depends on who you ask. I mean, some people think it's going to go off the day of fishing opener, or, you know, maybe a little bit later. It just depends. I mean, we know that there'll be some of the shallower lakes on Lake Vermilion, for example, you know, Pike Bay, Black Bay. Those are popular early season bays anyway. They're shallow, dark water, and those are the ones that, and there's usually current in there too, and that they lose their ice cover earlier. As of today, there's still ice on Pike Bay, and that usually goes out about a week to 10 days ahead of Big Bay, which is kind of the main body of Lake Vermilion. So it's going to be really close. Pike Bay will certainly be out by opener, but there may still be some lingering ice on Big Bay. We'll probably know better towards the middle of the week, and we'll certainly be able to talk about it next week. But we're hoping that that our ice is gone here so we can get down to some, you know, serious fishing. We're all ready after that long winter we had.
No kidding. It's Marshall Helmberger. You can read these stories and more news from northeastern Minnesota at their website, timberjay.com. Marshall, we'll check in with you next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Heidi.